Chapter 38. Bad Spirits. Battle Barge Charybdis, Uninhabited Lower Decks. Odysseon had followed the refugee girl as far as the lower decks. He had almost caught her in the refectory, chasing her through a labyrinth of benches and stools, the scent of stale recycled rations tainting the air, but she had slipped away. Her laughter mocked him, echoing in the expansive ship's mess, which was unnervingly desolate with the Charybdis on lockdown. Hard as he tried, he could not catch her. She was always a little farther ahead, her dainty form disappearing behind a bulkhead, and her grubby white dress trailing in her wake like little angelic wings. Always, though, she left enough of a trail for him to follow.
"Girl!" Odysseon had called out more than once. "Come here, girl. It isn't safe for you."
"It isn't safe for you," the girl repeated, giggling. "Chase, chase," she cried gleefully.
It struck Odysseon as strange that this was the same terrified little girl he had seen on the embarkation deck, she who looked so much like the daughter he had lost. He would not lose this one. He considered requesting help again, but kept his Vox unit attached to his belt. At last he chased her down to one of the sparsely populated lower decks. Some maintenance work was ongoing, but the only crew Odysseon passed during his pursuit of the girl had been mind-wiped servitors, and he hadn't seen any of them for quite some time. She was standing at the end of a sealed duct, perfectly still, as if expecting to be found, as if knowing it was the end of the game.
"That's enough now,"
Odysseon told her from the other end of the corridor, eyes straining to make her out in the low light. The girl didn't answer straight away. Odysseon couldn't quite see her face. Her hair was obscuring it, and she was just off to one side, her head slightly turned away. He took a step towards her, but only a step. What she said next seized his limbs as surely as any paralytic toxin.
"Daddy?"
Maelissa's voice. Odysseon could barely breathe. His heart raced and a feverish sweat drenched his palms.
"Not possible."
She turned and Odysseon saw her face. Aric Gulero had taken the throne in his shipmaster's absence. It fit him well, as did command. His place was upon the dais, the awesome strength of a starship almost literally at his fingertips. Before the war, he had been destined for a vessel of his own, more modest than the Charybdis, but a sturdy ship of the line, nonetheless. He had served with pride under Colo Odysseon, but Gulero had ambition and the natural affinity for void war to match it. But for Istvan, his life would have been different. Sitting idly in the throne, he considered that much else would now be different were it not for the massacre. His thoughts were getting away with him, and he forced himself to refocus. The bridge was quiet, with little to distract the edgy crew. Gulero had already requested a status report from Essenzi and the other officers. No change. Nothing further to do but watch and wait. Even conversation had ebbed to little more than the odd, dull murmur. Anxiety spread like a contagion, worsened with every shudder of metal, every flexed stanchion. In the warp, a hardened bridge crew had a much reduced level of agency. To Gulero, it bordered on impotency. Surrendering to Circe and her ability to traverse the tides chilled and unnerved him. For Gulero, returning to the cold heart of the void could not come soon enough. He only hoped the Charybdis could weather the battering she was taking at the hands of the storm. He eyed the shuttered viewport. Its grey, overlapping folds provided little in the way of distraction. His gaze roamed, surveying the crew at their stations. Several appeared calm, but their knuckles were white with gripping the edges of their consoles. Only the servitors were unmoved, their emotional concern siphoned away long ago and replaced by automated doctrine. The Charybdis had several servitors amongst its bridge crew for rapid hard data processing and other automatic mundane functions. Though they were cold and barely humanoid, let alone human, Gulero knew they were useful, but he still found their presence distasteful. The thought formed anew as he regarded the ship's augury operator. Essentially a data interpreter, the drone had reverted to a dormant state, its limbs hanging slack by its sides, its head bowed with chin touching chest. Even the cabling running from its machine body to the auger array the servitor was slaved to looked limp and enervated. Gulero was about to move on when he noticed something under the array itself, hiding in the thick wiring and power couplings. A tiny pair of pale hands, a white diaphanous dress shawling a small infantile form. Dingy light made it difficult to see her clearly, and she seemed to shuffle farther back into the shadows below the auger station. Gulero eased forwards in the throne, making sure his eyes weren't playing tricks. He reached as far as the edge of the dais before he saw her again. A girl, no more than a child. "Lieutenant Essenzi," he began, "do you see that?" Lissa Essenzi followed Gulero's outstretched hand. She frowned at first as several other bridge crew turned to look too, intrigued by the sudden commotion. "Is that a little girl?" she asked, confusion etched across her usually stern face. Gulero ventured farther forwards, crouching down as he left the dais and descending the steps leading up to it to try to reach eye level with the child. She was knelt down and just to the side, so Gulero couldn't quite see her face, obscured as it was behind strands of long black hair. "It's all right," he said, though he felt a tremor of unease in his gut, as if he had eaten something bad in the refectory. "You can come out." Gulero heard a faint childish giggle, but the girl stayed still. "You can't stay under there," he told her, closing on the auger station. "You don't belong here."
"You don't belong here,"
the girl replied, in a voice so deep and absurdly wrong coming out of a child that Essenzi was immediately sick. Gulero barely had time to process that one of his fellow officers had been violently ill when the girl crawled from her hiding place. Her hair parted as she faced him, showing to the lieutenant and all of the bridge crew what lay beneath. To his immense credit, Arik Gulero had the instinctive presence of mind to reach for his sidearm. He was even vaguely aware of the armsman who had been left on the bridge coming to investigate. But it was already too late. As he shut his eyes to the fire, Valkyr sagged against the brazier pan. His gauntleted hands gripped the edge of the hot basin, but did not burn. Only his face lay exposed. The rest of him was armored in fire-retardant ceramite. He had wanted desperately to see, to find some vestige in the flames, some inkling that Vulcan would return. Instead, he saw immolation, a conflagration to ignite a world. Its meaning was lost, much like the chaplain. Slowly he felt himself leaning closer, felt the prick of heat from the burning brazier. Something moved behind him, a scrape of metal against stone, a booted foot springing off the artificially rendered flags of the solitorium. Valkyr opened his eyes to fire. He recoiled, his head almost ablaze, his skin already burning, and through blurred, heat-hazed vision saw an enemy bearing down upon him.
Word-bearer, clad in the grey iron of his founding.
Valkyr roared, raising the dragon-headed Crozius to defend himself. The word-bearer came at him with sword drawn, but rather than attack, the Colchisian only parried as Valkyr swung at him. Spatha blade met the drake-scale haft of the mace. Sparks raked off the edge of the sword, near blunted by the tough hide. "Only cowards and assassins strike from the shadows," Valkyr hissed, his eyes streaming. "I was born in fire, you fool! You can't kill me like that!" "Not trying to," managed the word-bearer, clamping his hand around the chaplain's wrist as Valkyr seized his throat. The beleaguered warrior nodded behind the chaplain, letting go of his sword. "Look!" Something in the word-bearer's tone made Valkyr turn just a little, just enough to see the little girl retreating into the shadows at the edge of the room. "What is—" Valkyr released his grip, seeing not an enemy, but Caspian Hecht, who quickly swept up his sword and ran at the girl. "She's just a child!" cried Valkyr, but Hecht ignored him. Shadows smothered the strange girl, and before Hecht could act, she was gone. "Not a child," said Hecht, his voice still a choked whisper. He sheathed his sword and gestured to the brazier pan behind Valkyr. It had been polished to a mirror sheen and reflected the back of the chaplain's armor. Visible through the haze were two tiny handprints against his shoulder guards, too high and too wide to have belonged to a little girl, but present nonetheless. "Not even close," uttered Hecht. "I thought you were—" "I know what you thought. She would have burned you alive in that flame." "I didn't realize. How, though? She was just—" "Not a child," Hecht reminded him. Valkyr tried to raise his brothers, but got no response from the vox. "Dead?" asked Hecht. Valkyr nodded. "What do you know of this creature?" "Creatures. There'll be more. Use your mace. Bolt shells will barely scratch them. We are in their realm now. They'll be stronger, tough to kill." "Kill?" "In a manner of speaking. These are not unburdened, chaplain. They are Diabolos, never-born demons." Valkyr took up his helmet. As he slammed the skull mask over his face, the burns caught the light. Red raw flesh framed by ugly, painful welts. Salamanders were born of fire, but they were not immune to its effects. "Not given to apology, then," remarked Hecht, only half serious. "No," Valkyr replied flatly. But the cold fire of his eye lenses met Hecht's. Understanding passed between them. A debt was acknowledged, and an immediate bond of trust established, one that formed when one warrior saved the life of another. "We find Zitos and Numeon," said Valkyr. The doubts that had festered during his isolation usurped by the sudden need to act. "Immediately."